Hackers are after your business data. I can help. I am Vi, the virtual intelligence assistant at Virtual Armor.
Virtual Armor, partnered with Juniper Networks, provides cybersecurity services and end-to-end solutions to keep what's yours, yours. Defend yourself with managed firewall and managed SIM essential core services that are economical and efficient. Virtual Armor goes beyond just initial alerting to provide a thorough report on threats, vulnerabilities, and results.
Let me help protect you. Contact me at justaskvi. That's vi.com.
We chop it up with one of college football's finest, one of North Carolina and Charlotte's finest, Mike Felder, college football analyst with Stadium on Twitter at In the Bleachers. He is back with us on the Technicom hotline. Mike Felder, how you doing this morning, buddy?
Man, I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I'm doing good. We played some audio right there of Ray Tanner, which I want to get to here in just a moment, but as a Charlotte guy, I know you're college football through and through, and you know that's what you focus on, but you're a Charlotte guy, you know a thing or two about the Hornets. What do you think about LaMelo Ball coming to Charlotte?
I think it's obviously going to make people pay attention to Charlotte, which is something that's been a problem ever since the revamp, whether it was Bobcats or the Hornets now, and you know the reason why, and I know he's gone now, but Kemba Walker didn't get as much probably praises he should have got across the NBA is because folks, Charlotte's a small market team and people don't pay attention to them. And so when you have a name like LaMelo Ball and you have the idea that you get a guy that nationally moves the meter, I think it's going to be good for them. Maybe he can be there, you know, sort of Cam Newton in terms of helping them reach new heights, but also helping people pay attention that ordinarily wouldn't pay attention to this team because they are looking to build something. And obviously it doesn't matter what you build. I think that's important too, but it does kick off with having someone that people are going to pay attention to.
Yeah, agreed. All right, let's get back to the college football. We've been talking about Will Muschamp for the last week straight, and certainly since Sunday's decision to let him go. You and I have touched on this subject a lot throughout this college football season. Neither of us expected to see much in the way of coaching changes. But South Carolina clearly did the math and said that they expected to lose more money by keeping him, you know, because of fan apathy and everything else than they would stand to lose, you know, than by letting him go and paying that $13.2 million buyout. What do you think of that decision ultimately, and what do you think is next?
Woo, a lot of money. A lot of money for folks that are telling us that we're suffering and we don't have the money, and they found it, so I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens next. I've already seen people say we need an offensive guy, obviously trying to harken back to the, not just the Spurrier days, but the temperature in college football right now, the climate, if you will, is all offensive for offense first, offense first, offense first. And so I think that the goal for them should be to hire the best guy, not the flashiest guy. It's going to be interesting to see what they're looking for, right? Like if you're going offense forward, does that mean you're looking at Hugh Freeze? Is that what that means? And I also think it's interesting to see how they make this work, because it's not just that you have to pay his buyout because you did fire him. He didn't get a new job. You're probably going to have to pay somebody else's buyout too. And from a financial standpoint, I mean, obviously we talk about donations and all those things, which is how athletic departments really make a lot of their money, but that's going to be that's a lot of money if they hire someone who's actually good.
Yeah, no, I think you make a point. If there's anybody else out there, you know, I think Andy Staples wrote a good piece about this earlier this week, about the calculation and about how maybe they've, you know, broken the seal on doing something that some other schools were thinking about, but maybe the decision was tough. The PR is not something they might have wanted to deal with. They might have broken a seal here. If there's another coach or two that you think should be worried now as a result of the Muschamp firing, who would that be?
Well, and the logical answer at least feels like Jim Harbaugh, because he has not – oh, they're bad this year. I think Franklin also becomes a question because from a cultural standpoint, there are a lot of folks that aren't fans of his that are already at State College. And also the fact that they are 0-4 right now would give them the necessary way to be able to kind of push him out. But, man, I am, like, looking around, I don't think that there's anyone that should feel like that. Like, going into the season, everybody had Clay Helton on their short list, but he's won two games. They've been very close games. They could easily be 0-2. They've played 3 minutes of winning football, essentially, but that was to get them over the hump. So I think that nationally, outside of Harbaugh and Franklin, I think everybody else is kind of stand your ground. let's keep doing this. Let's see what happens a year from now. Although, oh, and let's throw Tom Herman's name in there too, because Texas loses this week. If Texas doesn't finish out the upcoming weeks in a good way, not just this week, but going forward, certainly folks are going to be looking at him thinking, what are we doing?
Mike Felder, stadium, college football analyst. He's with us on the Technicom hotline. Carolina Carolina Wake this past weekend was blackout drunk by the end of the first quarter, and it was amazing to watch. 112 combined points, 1,350 combined yards. We know Carolina's defense is still broken, but you know they've won the state championship. They've won some games since the bad loss to Florida State. They should be in the top 25 this week. They're the first in the others receiving votes category. Has Mac stabilized this thing? What do you see for them the rest of the way?
It's really tough to say anything is stabilized when your defense plays the way they do.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, is Texas stabilized right now? We just talked about Tom Herman on the hot seat because they gave up, you know, 50-something points to Texas Tech. And they have a very similar defensive issue to UNC. And UNC's this issue is their front four requires help. When your front four requires help, that means slants, that means stunts, that means blitzes. That means you leave yourself vulnerable to things, and Wake Forest took advantage of it. And we've seen other teams take advantage of it. We saw Florida State. I saw a board, one of those, a little graphic during the game. Since the UNC game, they'd only scored 21 points. And I was like, whoa, they scored more than that in the first half. So it's I don't know that stabilizes the right thing. I think they recognize who they are, and let's be real. They're a Big 12 team that's played in the ACC. They are a points. They are very similar to, not on the same talent level, but they're very similar to Florida, where we have to score, otherwise we will lose. And you can win games against teams that way, but it's always going to make your heart really race, as you mentioned.
Mike, I want to touch on this while I'm thinking about it. I mean, I'm looking at this weekend's schedule right now. Ole Miss, Texas A&M, postponed. Georgia Tech, Miami, postponed. Charlotte Marshall, postponed. Texas and Kansas, postponed. Louisiana Central, Arkansas. Those are just the games featuring ranked teams. We've seen a huge uptick in canceled and postponed games in the past 2 weeks. I think we can now tack on Maryland and Michigan State to that list. Mm-hmm. What do you say to those? And there are some increasingly vocal people out there saying they just need to call off the rest of the college football season. What is your response to people who make that claim, that assertion?
Yeah, it's trending that way right now. And the crazy part is, and this is probably where the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are going to be like, see, look, guys, this is why we said we weren't going to play in the first place. But it feels like what you're seeing, and they told us, right? The scientists, the doctors, they said, when we get into cold and flu season, we're going to see a second spike, and we're seeing the second spike. And now the second spike, people don't remember this, but in the first spike, we just canceled everything. Baseball, done. Basketball, done. Everything, college and pro, all done until we figured out what we were going to do in the interim, and then they did that. With football, this is the first time football's actively been involved in the spike from a game standpoint. But remember, in the first spike of the coronavirus, they canceled spring. Spring over. Training camp over. Not doing any of this stuff. So we're in the second wave of that. And, no, I understand why people are saying that. I think that the interesting part is going to be how teams navigate this, because now here's the reality. And I saw the NFL, every team is under COVID protocol at this point. So what I'm looking at is, obviously, it's worse for the Pac-12 or the Big Ten because they don't have the amount of games that you probably want to have for them to be able to play in the playoff. But I also look at it, if you're an SEC or ACC or Big 12 team, and the reality for them is, hey, man, we got to figure out how to make sure we keep our ship tight so that we don't run off course. And that's up to each individual school and each individual conference. And you look at the Pac-12 now, and they're starting to get so worried about the amount of games their teams are playing that they are thinking about opening up what was going to be just a Pac-12 bubble to allow them to play other teams, which that's great for BYU, but that might not be so great for the other teams that you're playing. So this is all a mess. I mean, for anyone, whether you think the virus is over, you don't think it's over, or you're like, hey, you need to mask up and stay at home, or I don't want to wear a mask, anyone can look at this and see that it is a mess. And I think at the end of the day, we do need to call it what it is. It's a mess.
No doubt. Mike, last thing I'll let you go here. Clemson back in action this weekend. Noon game in Tallahassee at Doak Campbell Stadium. And 6 years ago, hell, 4 or 5 years ago, it was unthinkable to believe that Clemson, would, as good as they've been, would go into Doak Campbell Stadium as 35.5-point favorites. That's the spread in this game on Saturday. There's a front, front page story on ESPN right now about the fall of Florida State football. I've never seen a program, you know, fall the way that they have in this short period of time. 6 years ago, they were the top of the college football world, and right now they've dug a hole so deep that I'm not sure they can see out of it. How bad a shape is Florida State in right now? Can Mike Norvell fix it, and do you think he'll have time to fix it?
I don't know if he's going to have time to answer the last question first. Don't know if they're going to give him the time. They're angry and they're frustrated, and more specifically, they're embarrassed. And I'll expand on this, right, if you give me a little bit of time.
Sure.
So here's the thing. Florida State is, we also had never seen a program come to prominence the way that Florida State came to prominence. They were a nobody. You hire Bowden, they go on the road warriors. They take on that road warrior mentality, right? We'll play anybody, anywhere, anytime. We'll show you how good we are. So they did that, and it worked out really well. So what you have is a younger fan base than most college football fan bases and a younger group in terms of college football than the blue bloods, your Michigans, your Alabamas, your Ohio States, right? They weren't good at the same time. So they burst onto the scene. Most of these people that love Florida State, the most vocal Florida State fans, they don't know a time when Florida State wasn't that good. They don't know about it. They don't know it exists. But Florida State gave rise to Boise State and gave rise to Virginia Tech and then gave rise to Oregon. They were a trailblazer in that regard. And so what you're dealing with are people who don't understand not being good. So they don't get, there's no ebb, there's no flow, there's just win. There's only win. And so you have that. And then you have the proliferation of college football, where it used to be, if you're in Florida, there's Florida State, there's Miami, you go to one of those three schools if you're the best player there, and that's all you do. Maybe you go to Alabama, maybe you go to Nebraska, maybe you go to Ohio State, but you usually go there. But then all of a sudden, oh, wow, I can watch teams from other places, and they seem cool, and I can take visits everywhere else, and that seems cool. So you're not going to get the – so Florida State is fighting a battle of everybody getting into Florida to take players that they want. They're fighting a battle of having to go elsewhere to find players, which is really tough. And then they're fighting a battle of team discipline, team culture, this level of – and I'm not even going to use the word entitlement.
Yeah.
What I think is the idea that because I'm good enough to go here, we should be good enough to win. And it's not that they don't work hard, because they do. Every person that plays college football works hard. I understand that. But what I am going to say is they don't understand the team dynamic of all of this, and that's a massive problem. And then obviously you throw in the injuries, you throw in that the fact that it's really tough to get offensive linemen out of the state of Florida. It's really tough.
Yes.
It's hard. There's not a lot of them there. Recruit offensive linemen in Florida. You recruit offensive linemen in Texas or in Ohio or in Pennsylvania. So you got to get out and go do that, except those kids probably going to end up going to Ohio State or going to go to Penn State, or they're going to go to wherever. So there's a lot of layers here. And as someone who considers himself at least a dynamic thinker about this sport, they have multiple things stacked up against them. And then you mix in the fact that they have, as I mentioned at the top, this younger fan base, right? They don't have the moneyed fan base that other programs have.
Yeah.
They don't have a T. Boone Pickens. They don't have those things. And when you have that, and then let's remember, they don't have historically, I believe it was a women's college, which means they historically don't have the money. So it's really tough. They were a young upstart. It was hard. And that's not something bad about women. It's saying that at that stage in history in America, women weren't getting money jobs to give back to them.
No doubt. Mike, I'm up against it. I got to jump, buddy. I'm sorry. No, you're good. You're exactly right about all this, man. We appreciate you as always. We'll dive back in next week, brother. Thank you for the time as always. Be well.
Sounds good.
It's all right.